Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, we're really pleased to welcome Randy Mullett to our podcast. Randy serves as Executive Director of the Washington, D.C.-based Americans for Modern Transportation. In addition to his role at AMT, Randy serves as the founder of Mullett Strategies, a consulting practice that is focused on freight transportation, sustainability, security, emerging technologies, and aligning business structures and resources to support strategic goals and outcomes. Randy also previously served as Vice President of Government Relations and Public Affairs for XPO Logistics, which was formerly Conway, and he spent 26 years there in trucking operations, management, and sales. Randy's also a member of the World Economic Forum's Global Expert Network on the Future of Supply Chain and Logistics and serves on the board of Trucker Tools as well. Hey, Randy, welcome to our podcast today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff. I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been wanting to have you on for a while, and given all the things going on in Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway and all the changes, I think the time is right. So before we get going, Randy, I think it'd be good for our audience to get an overview of exactly what Americans for Modern Transportation is and does, as well as your role there as executive director.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity to let you know about AMT. Americans for Modern Transportation is a group that's made up of America's largest shippers and trucking companies, almost all involved in this, and food distribution, almost all involved in small package and LTL type shipments. The goal of the group right now is to modernize America's transportation system to help support the rise of commerce that's done digitally and over the internet. So one of our main goals is to advance certain safety technologies on in the trucking industry, and also to advance the use of twin 33-foot trailers, where we now run twin 28-foot trailers. And the group has been active for a couple years for a few years in Washington, and will continue to do so, pushing that agenda.
That's terrific. And we'll definitely circle back to the twin 33 topic later on in our talk. So, Randy, how about we take a few minutes to talk about the current state of infrastructure at the national or federal level, specifically transportation infrastructure as it relates to the people that you and I know and work with on the supply chain and logistics side. There's a lot to talk about there, so we could keep it at a fairly high level and then dig deeper as we move along.
Yeah, you can dive down as much as you want. Right now, the current state of infrastructure at the federal and the state level is that the lines are getting blurred. The difference between the local and state and federal roles are being somewhat blurred as we change who's driving the bus, so to speak, in certain areas. We're expanding the definition of infrastructure under COVID and the COVID relief packages to include things that you and I that have worried about freight and surface transportation and mobility, to include electrical grid, water systems, internet and internet access. And while all those are important, it changes the way we think about infrastructure and from roads and bridges, and then causes us to then have competing interests that we didn't really have before for the T&I money.
Right. And you know, when we talk about transportation infrastructure, it's kind of hard not to think about it from the authorization perspective in terms of a long-term funding bill. I know last year at the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, Congress extended the current authorization known as the FAST Act, Fixing America's Surface Transportation is what that stands for our audience. And, you know, here we are, we're 1 month in and change to 2021, and we're still talking about a lot of the same things. So before you know it, we'll be up against it again. That with that as a backdrop, what do you think are the true prospects for a new long-term authorization?
So I think that all that you've said is correct. And my personal opinion is that the chances of a traditional long-term reauthorization bill are not good right now. And I think that that is because a couple of things are happening. We've got this huge bucket of money that's going out as COVID relief / stimulus money. And an awful lot of that is going to transit systems. A lot of it's going to specific infrastructure, you know, the shovel ready type things. And a lot of it's going to cities and states that would normally depend on a federal match out of FHWA to get some of their projects done. So I think that that takes a lot of the air out of the balloon as far as the pressure goes to actually make a T&I bill a really, really high priority. I also think they're going to struggle a bit with what does a infrastructure bill look like, and are we structured right in Congress to make that happen? Are our funding mechanisms correct? Are the allocations or federal shares correct? So I think all those are going to ball together to slow down the process, but mostly because a lot of the money is going to go out under these different things. Now, that having been said, I think there's a big desire to get an infrastructure bill done, and I think they're going to work really, really hard at it. So I don't think it's a throwaway or a waste of time. Anything that you know, they continually build on what they've done before. So things that were in Chairman DeFazio's huge bill last year that was passed by the House that don't get done in these relief packages, a lot of that will come back. And, you know, we're thinking about things differently in terms of the environment and sustainability and electric vehicles or other alternative fuels. And I think more importantly, what COVID has shown us is that people don't really have to go out of their houses as much.
Sure.
So I for one, and this may be sacrilege, I would love to see them delay passage of a long-term bill until we have a little clearer picture of what transportation and transportation needs are going to look like when we come out of COVID and start the COVID problem and start with the recovery. In other words, I want us to be skating to where the puck's going to be, not where the puck has been.
Sure.
And if we pass a bill that's locked into the same funding mechanisms, the same thought processes about roads and bridges and transits and rail crossings and the splits have to be the same, I think we're going to miss a big, big opportunity to really help propel our economy forward and make sure we really are building and changing our transportation system to reflect where things are going.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about transportation infrastructure, it's kind of hard not to think about it from the authorization perspective in terms of a long-term funding bill. I know last year at the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, Congress extended the current authorization known as the FAST Act, Fixing America's Surface Transportation is what that stands for our audience. And you know, here we are, we're 1 month in and change to 2021, and we're still talking about a lot of the same things. So before you know it, we'll be up against it again. That with that as a backdrop, what do you think are the true prospects for a new long-term authorization?
So I think that that group wants several things out of authorization. But number one, they want certainty. They want certainty around where's the funding going to go, what are the pay mechanisms or the pay for mechanisms, so that because that affects their costs. And they also want certainty around the regulatory scheme. So signals in a long-term bill about where those two specific items are going are really, really important. Now, second thing is I think that they need to signal that freight and commerce are really, really important and maintain that focus like the FAST Act did. You know, freight's often forgotten, but I know that as we come out of COVID, we really, really do need to think about how do we not only continue to focus on freight, but enhance the movement of freight and commerce and mobility as needed around the country. So I think that's really, really important. The president and a lot of his supporters are very, very excited about high-speed rail and reinvigoration of the passenger rail network. And they also have the Democrats for a long, long time as part of the livability, sustainability, and equity models have thought a lot about complete streets and some of that kind of stuff. And I believe that those are items that they need to not be seduced by. And by that, I mean, we can't throw freight and commerce over the wall for funding with as we chase those kinds of things. So that would be things I think are really, really important and I would be looking for in the bill.
Okay, great. And of course, everyone's favorite topic, how does this bill get paid for? I mean, I noted the national federal gasoline tax obviously hasn't been raised going back to 1993. There's been all kinds of different proposals floated. Some met with warmer welcomes than others, perhaps. But where do you think stand on the funding front?
So I don't think the Highway Trust Fund goes away, and the existing gas tax, I don't think it's going to change. Secretary Buttigieg in his hearing indicated that gas tax was and fuel tax was probably on the table, but very quickly walked that back. And to put a exclamation point on that, the gasoline caucus, Congressman Blumenauer, actually folded that caucus and has put it out of business. So it tells me that's not an area that they're going to go to. Now, that being said, that still provides a pretty good chunk of change for the Highway Trust Fund. It just won't fully fund it. I think what ends up happening is in the early years, you're going to continue to see general fund transfers. And then I look for a couple things to happen. I really do think that VMT is not just on their radar. It's something that they really want to have happen. It may be a really, really good thing for the country long term if we can figure out all of the technical glitches and security glitches that go along with that. I think that ultimately thinking of that as user fee is really, really a good way to go. I'm also hearing that carbon pricing of some kind may come back. That'll be a way to focus on petroleum fuels. And then I think that specific vehicle registrations at the federal level are another way that they might be able to think about this. We currently register trucks at specific weight limits. Well, if you want a truck to pay more, you could charge more as an upfront or annual registration fee. You can do the same thing for different types of cars based on the fuel or annual miles that they drive. So there are different ways to get at this. I think we've been so focused to come back to the fuel tax because it's easy and we're used to it and everybody sure wants to do it, that all these other things, we look for reasons why we shouldn't do them instead of why we should. And I think that'll change in this administration.
Okay. All right. And I know at the outset of our conversation, you mentioned the whole Twin 33 trailer situation and sort of making the case. There's obviously a lot there. Rail interest as it relates to truck size and weight. There's a bit of contention. Sort of what's the current landscape as it relates to those two topics, specifically Twin 33 trailers in addition to truck size and weight?
So I think generally the truck size and weight battle is a really, really hard one, as you know. Railroads are really, really opposed because they are concerned about competition. Teamsters generally, labor has generally opposed because they think that increased efficiency may create less jobs for them. And then the safety advocates are generally opposed. Under the thought that bigger and heavier is always bad. And I think that those dynamics haven't gone away, but there's also a certain realization that's hitting a lot of people. And I'll talk specifically about Twin 33s because that's what I'm most familiar with, and that's what the group that I'm involved with is proposing. We don't want that group wants no extra weight involved, so just take weight off the table. And talk about the way our buying habits are changing and what people are getting delivered to their homes and into their neighborhoods and things like that. Twin 33-foot trailers will still stay substantially below the 80,000-pound limit, but they get 18% more cubic feet in each load.
Wow.
So it's a huge efficiency gain for our highway system. It's a huge cost savings for both trucking companies and consumers. There's a huge fuel savings. If you could run 18% less trips, that would be amazing. And there's also a huge safety savings or safety benefit. And I know that people like to look at these things as an individual truck that weighs more or is bigger is obviously going to be more dangerous. I don't think that's true, but that's the storyline. Our thought is if you can run 10% fewer truck miles to move the same amount of freight, there's a huge safety benefit in just exposure.
Yes.
When you buy your car insurance for your personal vehicle, they always ask you how many miles a year you're going to drive. Well, if we can drive the miles down a lot to move the same amount of freight, we're going to be much, much safer. A few other things that go on in that space. We know from all the DOT, Department of Commerce, that the anticipated growth of our economy and the growth of freight over the next 25 years is in the 50 to 60% range. And that's based on population growth. We just buy more. And that is changing into lots more small individual shipments that take up more space because of additional packaging going to homes than the big heavy industrial shipments that they had before. So not only is it growing, it's shifting in the way we need to do it. We can't possibly build 50% more lane miles in 25 years. The cost is impossible for us to meet, and the schedule is impossible for us to meet. So how do we as a country start thinking about, well, how do you do this? We got to put 10 pounds into a 5-pound sack. And one of the ways to do that is to, use twin 33-foot trailers. It costs the government nothing.
Right, right.
To take you back to my days at Conway and XPO, we didn't think we could get 18% improvement. But we did think we could legitimately get a 10% improvement. We didn't think we could get 18 because you run empties in certain lanes. Every load's not full. We're not hauling air or water, so you can't fill up every little nook and cranny. But we ran about 1 billion miles a year on the U.S. highways.
Not insignificant.
No, 10% is 100 million miles.
Yeah.
The fuel savings, the congestion, the wear and tear on the highways, the impact on driver shortage, the impact on cost for consumers, all those things, the ability to pay higher wages, everything we say we want, Twin 33s would do at no mm-hmm. cost to the government.
Yeah,
so I think those kind of solutions are going to become more and more important as we recover, and as we get our backs up against the wall in this, you can't put 10 pounds in a 5-pound sack. I don't care how good you are.
No, it's a good analogy. So just to wrap up with one final quick question, Randy, there's obviously a whole slew of things going on the regulatory front, seemingly at all times within the freight transportation and logistics sectors. I'm thinking of things like, hours of service, the electronic logging mandate, drivers under 21 being able to cross state lines, AB5, the independent contractor issue. It goes on and on. What in your opinion, what are some of the real important ones? What are some of the ones that really are ones we should be keeping a close eye on at the moment?
Well, I think that there's probably two or three buckets that they'll be in. I think one is this independent contractor model. What you mentioned it as AB5, but I'll broaden that out. The independent contractor model for, you know, trucking industry, the entire gig economy. What does that look like, and how are we going to wrestle that to the ground? That has really big implications for the truckload sector and for the last mile sector. So that's number one. The second one involves, will there be any rollbacks or changes to hours of service?
Right.
And I don't think that any of those are nails in the coffin, so to speak, for the industry. But even little nibs and nubs can affect capacity a lot. So I think that's another one. Another thing that might affect capacity in a kind of back doorway is if speed limiters rulemaking gets reopened. Insurance levels will be important, particularly to smaller carriers and the owner operator community.
Okay.
And those things will affect capacity. And then I think you had mentioned ELDs. They're not going away, and they're not going to change. They're in everybody's truck. But I think that FMCSA and Chairman DeFazio both have a interest in, can we make use of that data to figure out ways of getting drivers paid their detention time in the right way? And so that's a big step to think about. The FMCSA may start regulating shippers or something like that. I think that that's not likely, but I think they'll spend a bunch of time on it, and it'll burn a lot of calories.
Yeah, good way of putting it. Well, listen, Randy, we're at the end of our time for today's podcast. It's been great having you. We covered a lot of ground, and certainly a lot to keep an eye on in the coming weeks, months, years. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to say thanks for joining us today.
Well, Jeff, thanks very, very much for having me. And thanks an awful lot for all your group does to keep our industry informed. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks. We appreciate that, too. And for our audience, if you'd like to sign up to our podcast, wherever you go get your podcast, just go check out Supply Chain 24/7 and be sure to subscribe. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.